All right, Alan.
No, I was saying, in St. Petersburg, we go to Friday night services more frequently than we go here. And it's a very neat group that we know socially, so we go there, from my point of view, to be there with them.
In St. Peters?
Yeah.
Florida.
We spend...
Oh, I thought Russia.
No.
Okay, sorry.
I'd like to now go back where I interrupted you earlier about your returning to the USSR 6 months after your first visit. So I'm assuming that that's in 59 then.
59, yeah. March.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I went to the gate where the cab had left me, and I noticed later that he was waiting for me, knew I'd be back very quickly. And presented my car, said I wanted to see Dr. Guttmacher. Incidentally, Lev Israel Guttmacher. I suspected he was Jewish, and I found out later he was. But, well, to present oneself from the United States without formal okay is unheard of at that time, certainly. Maybe today, too. And about a half hour passed, and finally someone came back and said, he's on a trip, he's up to Kansas, he's not available. So I left, went back to the States. Let me jump now, 20 years, maybe, something like that. I got a call from Philadelphia from a gentleman, a Russian emigre, whose name I knew he had published in this field, and I can't remember. I'll have to process a little bit to remember his name. And he was working for the Institute for Scientific Information in Philadelphia, an organization that I know very well. And he told me who he is, that he has emigrated, and he'd like to meet with me someday at one of the professional society meetings, which we arranged. He said he was in the laboratory at the time that I came. He said, you wouldn't believe what had happened when they heard that I was waiting outside. Guttmacher, who was afraid of his shadow and was always politically worried that something will happen because he's Jewish, because he's this, because he's that, went to the bathroom and locked himself in until he heard, he was told that I had gone. Okay. It was, you know, a major crisis. So he told me that. And,
you'd almost have to live under that system to understand.
To understand
exactly.
That, right. Well, I returned to Cleveland, and about a month later I got a package from the USSR from Guttmacher, a copy of his latest book in Russian on electronic information logic machines, and inscribed to my good friend and all that. So, Roz was then at the stage in her Russian studies where she needed some exercise, so I said, why don't you come up by it? She almost died, but she did it with dictionaries and help on terminology that was a little obscure. It was published by Emphasized Publishers, one of the major scientific publishers.
With her translation?
Okay.
How wonderful.
Yes. She's good.
Okay, then could you tell me a little bit about your international conference that you planned that ended up in Cleveland?
Held it in 1960, 1961. When an American is arranging for an international conference here, one has to work through the East-West Center in Washington, the State Department. They do everything they can to make it difficult for you, at least it seems to me. In demanding certain things from the Russians, they want to get what they can out of it in return for permitting them to come to the U.S. And I was thinking, my God, if we could only get them here, it's to our advantage. Well, finally we pulled it off. And a group came. There was an interesting episode. Jimmy Rand had an estate right outside of Cleveland. And he had a big party for people in the area, for the Russian visitors, one of whom was obviously their KGB type that always travels with this group. The one of the guys, the technical people, presumed technical people, was suddenly missing on these grounds, these large grounds. And the KGB guy, what we assumed was that, went absolutely insane, running around in circles and all that. And it just turned out that eventually he had just taken a long walk. But to see what happens,
case of defection?
The case of defection. Certainly. The KGB guy would have been in trouble. So we had the conference. It went off well. We had people from about 12 different countries. We had the Russian group at our house, Cleveland. They presented us with a gift. And do you know these velvet-lined boxes with beautiful wood that are given as gifts with silverware when someone gets married? Well, it was that kind of a box, and each slot had an example of a different liquor of the USSR, all the different kinds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, with the Russian labels on it.
Did you save the bottles? And
well, they began to evaporate. I don't know if Rose has some of them, but they're around somewhere, a few of them. Well, that was remembering the amount of drinking we did when I visited there.
I wanted to ask you, too, you were talking about...
I got to tell you that story. The then ambassador to the USSR invited us to a Sunday morning, when we first arrived, the Sunday morning soiree at the ambassador's residence, Moscow. They were anxious to meet this level of person in the USSR they'd never been in touch with at the ministerial level. And the group came, and at 10 in the morning they started serving weak scotches, you know, very modest weak scotches, with little pizzas, hors d'oeuvres, and things like that. That was fun. After an hour and a half, the Russians, you know, thanked them profusely and said, "We would like to invite you to come to our place." So I figured that, you know, in the next week or so they'll do that. Now, I had a limousine waiting, it took me. And there was a bar there. And I went to a hotel bar, and what would you have to drink? And I didn't need breakfast or anything. So I didn't know how to order. That's it. You know, just the menu, the list of spirits. They said, "Let us start at the top and go to the bottom." So the second one, or the third one, was a drink with a raw egg in it, and I just couldn't face it. So they slapped me on my, "What's the matter, a weak American professor?" Well, it went like that, and finally I dissociated, got back to my hotel room. I hadn't had anything to eat, so I called, got them to send up a hot soup to start things going. Well, the hot soup hit my stomach, and I became roaring drunk. Jimmy Fran couldn't believe it, so he put me to bed. Well, that was
marvelous.
The recollection of that.
Marvelous. You talked about some of the grants that you had when Dr. Litchfield invited you to come to the University of Pittsburgh, when that whole thing. What were your grants, and can you do you remember any of the organizations?
Well, National Science Foundation. I had almost continuous support from the National Science Foundation on a number of things. The development of the first computerized retrieval service in the field of metallurgy. U.S. Office of Education to study and develop the specifications for what became the Educational Resources Information Center, a nationwide information storage and retrieval system that still exists today. That one was interesting. They really wanted that done. And I was on my way to Rio de Janeiro for a conference, stopping in Puerto Rico to either for changing planes or for refueling, whatever it was. And they called me before I left on this trip, hours before, and they said, "We need a proposal from you on this, this, and this." I said, "I'm just leaving, and I won't be back for 2 weeks." They said, "Look, write it out. send a special delivery from Puerto Rico when you land. We'll type it, we'll take care of everything. And that's what I did. I sent a foolscap paper written out, and it was accepted, and it led to that study, which was sort of a landmark. Then there was a lot of theoretical stuff that we did, that I got grants for. And
from?
National Science Foundation, okay. Office of Naval Research, Office, U.S. Office of Education, the National Library of Medicine, the American Society for Metals, a number of the National Association of Paint Societies, something like that. It was a conglomerate that wanted a job down in their field. I didn't know you were going to ask this, or I would have tried to.
Okay, well,
together.
We can get back to it if okay. You'd like us to ask again.
Just about every funding agency. The Air Force Office of Scientific Research was another one. Then we got a grant from the Goodyear Aerospace Corporation in Akron, Ohio, from Western Michigan University, because they wanted to join us in a conference that I was running, so they gave us a grant. University of Akron, the American Chemical Society. This has been a long, long period. And the period that I'm talking about, starting in 1963, was the period, the heyday in Washington and everywhere, getting money. And, I'm overemphasizing to make a point, but you went down to Washington with your hat, they filled it up, and you came back.
It's very competitive, too, I would imagine.
No, it wasn't.
Not at all. I mean, the agencies weren't.
There was a lot of money, and presumably it was competitive, but, for us it was easy. We were the first ones in the field, first ones with an academic program, and
they all wanted to give to it.
They wanted to give to it.
Certainly.
And once you do a couple of successful projects, and they get the reports, and it's done properly, then they've got a sure thing. They believe they have a
right.
sure thing.
Right.
So it becomes easier and easier, until it became harder and harder, when money became tight.
All these agencies now still exist?
Most of them still exist, but wow.
Tight.
It's like getting money out of a turnip.
Tell me, Alan, do you have any association now with anyone in Russia, or what is the relationship to the academic world of Russia and
I have
United States?
My academic environment, Pitt, had no relationships with that.
Gabby, do you have any?
Going back to these grants. I shouldn't say I'm assuming. You already had many of these grants at Western Reserve.
Some of them, yeah.
Did you bring them to Pittsburgh?
You brought
them along.
Yeah.
And that was okay. You could do that.
Well, the institution didn't like it that you were leaving, but the sponsor insisted they weren't giving it to the institution, although officially, legally, they give it to the institution. It says so clearly. But the institution is not going to get the agency unhappy with them by saying we won't permit it, because there's always a clause saying they cancel the grant. So, they pitch and pitch, but they do it.
But you intimated that that was one of the allures, one of your attractions, that you had...
I thought it was my charming personality.
Okay, because you mentioned that. Alan, I'm going to get to the questionnaire a little bit now. Life in the city. We talked about the Bronx, and culturally, politically, any changes that you've seen or anything that you've observed
in Pittsburgh,
and possibly in contrast to other cities.
Well, first of all, I'm sure you've heard this from many, many people who arrive in Pittsburgh, that it's the most friendly place that exists.
Yes.
We were just accepted very. The that hasn't changed. I mean, we, you know, we meet new people, and but you mentioned the Wallace, how do we get to know them? You know, it just clicked like that. And it's a lot easier than I remember Cleveland was. Boston was difficult as hell. Washington, D.C. was not easy. But Pittsburgh is just a friendly place in general.
Healthcare, or any?
Well, we've, you know, Boston was a great healthcare center. Washington was too. Columbus was good with OSU, Ohio State University Med School. So we've been in places that have excellent places. We obviously didn't have a place that did heart and lung transplants, but we've always had good.
Your children like Pittsburgh, the schooling, the were they satisfied with their?
Well, the youngest still hasn't experienced it. Their daughter is 5 years old. The next two older ones are not in Pittsburgh anymore. They're in Augusta, Georgia, and in Woodsbury, Pennsylvania. The eldest is Green Tree. They've been in the Green Tree school system throughout, and I guess they've been reasonably satisfied with it. Their son, our eldest grandson, went to Northwestern and all that, so that's not Pittsburgh.
Did your girls, your girls got mixed up?
Yeah. No.
They weren't.
No.
And your Cleveland social life, that was something that we wanted to ask you a little bit about, because it's, you seem very pleased to be there.
Yeah, we had a very good circle of friends. I don't think we had any non-Jewish friends. It was funny. We didn't try to do it that way, but that's the way it worked out. It's amazing. We have, I'm trying to think, we only have, in St. Petersburg, we only have one very good non-Jewish friends who we know since Washington days. But do you find that in your social life, that tends to be mostly Jewish or all Jewish? That's the way it is with us.
I have some Gentile friends, but I would say most of my friends are Jewish.
Half and half.
Half and half.
I think so. But our old friends from where we lived in other places. No, they aren't all Jewish.
They weren't all Jewish.
It's your interview, not mine.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Your professional life or career, we talked a good bit about, and we also have your resume. I think I asked you this, or maybe Gabi had, anyone that had great influence on your career or and these people you have mentioned through, but
well,
is there anyone that you feel that is really...
Perry was the one who taught me everything I knew in the first years.
Yeah.
I mean, a brilliant guy, and he taught me everything I knew. I didn't know anything in this field, really, and he taught me.
And how about your career now?
Well, my career now has to do with encyclopedias. I talked about that part of it. Let me show you something.
Say it again.
There are four?
Four encyclopedias that I'm involved with. This one, the Encyclopedia of Library and Information Science, volume 51 just published, volume 52 coming out soon. Comes out every 6 months. I try to get two a year. It started out as an 8-volume work that just grew.
And you're up to 51.
Yeah.
Is any of it computerized or?
Yes. The publisher loves to publish about computers, but doesn't like to use them, except for financial. I started this in 1965, and just kept going. And after I retired, I continued it. There's another one, in the Encyclopedia of Microcomputers, item 12 just arrived today to a year. Encyclopedia of Computer Science and Technology, item 28, due out. And then there's one on the Encyclopedia of Telecommunications. Yeah, I guess that's listed there.
Mm-hmm.
The telecommunications, I'm the not the executive editor, but an associate editor. The other's executive editor.
Now, you so see, you're far from retired.
You'll see the on the title page here, it shows the administrative editor, Carolyn Hall. Carolyn Hall is our youngest daughter. Roz's name used to be there. She used to be the administrative editor for all of these. And this entailed following up on everything that was going on and being in touch with all the authors who were delinquent and with the publisher and all that. Then she decided to retire a few years ago, coincident with when our daughter had a baby, adopted a baby. And it worked out beautifully. She works full time with us, and it's funny. Roz always great respect our generation, great respect for erudition and all that. So when she was on the phone, said, "Oh, Dr. So and so, Dr. So and so, Dr. So and so." Carol gets on the phone. Joe, how are you? And it works.
How do you feel about that?
If it works, it works.
Yeah.
Can I show you for just a sip?
Do you do any volunteering at all?
At the moment, I don't. I've got a full plate
sure
right now with this.
Okay.
And to this publisher, I'm a member of the board of directors of the company and a member of their executive committee. So, you know, there's stuff to do.
Okay. Now, your social life, family, vacations and things that... hobbies?
Well, the social life is... very active, very active. We've got a lot of friends, and we go out a lot. Vacations, you know, last year we were in, where were we? In Switzerland for a week. And people say we're on vacation 5 months of the year, we're in St. Petersburg. We don't look at that as vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, we're living there. We're actually doing the same thing there that we do here. As far as social life and, you know, keeping active. And I keep going on. My encyclopedias when I'm down there, so that's not vacation. But the normal type of vacation, we, you know, we like to go overseas once a year.
And did
Roz
you?
Roz likes to go overseas once a year. I go alone.
Ideally, you wouldn't vacation or like to stay in the States?
Well, I have traveled overseas so
yeah.
much that, you know, it doesn't mean as much as it does to Roz.
How about family vacations? Did you take trips with your children when
yes.
they were younger?
The
any favorite
summertime.
Spots?
Oh, we've done a lot of things. We've driven all the way to the West Coast, up to the North, and of course we've been throughout the United States. Whenever I had a trip, wherever, I'd take them along. We'd extend a two-day trip into a week very often, stopping at motels and swimming pools and eating out and all that. Oh, yeah. They're all there growing up here.
And you still, do you ever all get together in sort of a neutral spot, or do they just visit you in Florida?
They don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. They come individually. They come together for either Thanksgiving or Christmas, Hanukkah.
Yeah. Okay, any...
And we visit them, of course. You know, visit them several times a year.
Living out here, have you run into any anti-Semitism, or you're living in what I would consider an integrated community?
Pretty much. I'm trying to think if there's been any anti-Semitic. Nothing comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Do you belong to any organizations, Jewish organizations, like community, you know, Jewish
well,
centers or...
Long-term time members of the community center, Jewish community center, but we quit it about a year ago. We used to get bills each year, and they said, and we never did anything with it because we never had time to go to the swimming pool or whatever, because we had other ways to do this at the spa or what have you. So we started getting the bills because of the increased cost of serving you. We're raising the dues, and they're coming PO. Well, we stopped a year or two ago, I forget when, but I belong to that.
You do belong to Temple Emmanuel, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other?
Well, the St. Petersburg one, yeah.
Okay.
What's that called? Now I asked it quickly.
I'll put it down.
Sorry.
All right.
For a question.
Okay.
Well, this is a question that I really would like to ask. It probably fills the tape. It's about all your political observations and feelings during Depression, during the Prohibition, all the wars, the First World War, the Second World War, Korean War, Vietnamese War, civil rights movements, the birth of the State of Israel. And
well, obviously I wasn't politically active during
the First World War.
The birth of the State of Israel, I wasn't really politically aware at that time.
Civil rights?
Civil rights, not an activist, but certainly sympathetic. You know, pick when it had its big push for affirmative action. I had a staff, a lead secretary and two others, a receptionist, two others from my private office. And one opening appeared, and I was the first administrator at Pitt to hire a black secretary.
When was that?
Gee, very early on. Whenever the
early 60s?
The early 60s. And she's still there. I see her when I come in and once a week. And a delightful gal. Not very good, but...
Did you get any gaff? Were people upset with you, or what was the reaction to the...
The upper administration was delighted that someone would never do this, and they tried to do that as well. But the... her level realized that she was not as qualified as they were.
And how did that...
Well, they wouldn't grumble out loud, but you could tell.
And do you think she's still there because of that?
Because, yeah. And she's there too long now to... she'll end up being retired. But they eventually had to promote, after I left, they promoted her to a meaningless position as director of communications for the department. You know, doesn't mean anything. She answers the phones, all of that. But,
how do you feel about that?
Well,
when you hired her, did you know that?
I knew that she was not up to the others. You know, she didn't have that educational background that I would have preferred. But I figured she'll work into it, and I ought to give her a chance. What I feel good about is that here was a woman that ended up living a much better life for her family and for her kids, who have now gone ahead, than she could possibly have done otherwise.
So you think people need a head start?
Yeah, and I feel good about that.
That is a head start, literally, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel good about that.
Yeah. That's the nicest description I've had of head start. The Korean War?
The Korean War. I guess I was one of the few Jewish supporters.
Okay. Vietnamese War?
I was one of the last Jewish friends to see the light.
That it was not a good war?
That's right.
In the beginning?
Beginning, I believed what I heard. Peterson's Guide to Graduate Programs is what people who are looking for graduate programs in certain fields go to. It's been in existence many, many years, and they have definitions of the field, the various fields. one of them that I've written now for many years has been the one on information science, and I'm turning this over to you for any use it might be for background or whatever.
Thank you. All right. Actually, you talked about your relationship to employees with your one first black employee. Are there any other things that you...
If they were not lying, what a number of employees said during my retirement party in December of 1991 suggests that I started a lot of people on their careers, many tenured professors in various areas in this field.
So you were the inspiration?
Well, I was their mentor or mm-hmm. Their advisor in their doctoral programs. It's funny. I started a doctoral program, had a lot of doctoral students. And I don't have one myself, but that's the way it goes.
Are you sorry?
Oh, I don't care.
You don't care.
I'm sort of proud of it.
That's sort of what I gathered, but yeah.
Sure. You know, Jews are supposed to overcome adversity.
You have, huh?
Well, it's been,
you so know, you feel good about your...
I feel good. Oh, yeah. I mean, it would have been okay the other way around, too, but this is fine. So there have been a lot of...